It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. It is time for Wisconsin Life. Here is producer Maureen McCollum with a story about the magic of childhood baseball fields.
There are so many activities that define summertime as a kid. Maybe it's running through a sprinkler, trips to the library, playing tag through the neighbor's yard. For writer Ron Weber, it was playing baseball, something he looks back on with deeply fond memories.
It comes as the snow melts in mid-March, and the ground is dried by wind and sunshine. On those early warm days, as the sun continues riding a little higher on its daily arc, I am referring to a season that for me as a kid was most important of all, baseball. I was lucky enough to have grown up when baseball was unquestionably America's pastime. After a long winter, it was time for the only game that really mattered. We often endured a two-week period in which the clay soils dried out by playing catch or wiffle ball on any patch of dry ground we could find. Eventually came the day to play ball. When I was 8, my 13-year-old brother Rick and a few other neighborhood kids had decided to reclaim a roughly 1-acre patch of fallow field on our property in Kenosha County, bordered by a country road and rows of spruce trees lining the remaining three sides. We cut the long grasses and weeds from the field using push lawnmowers, which for the first pass had to be tilted up to mow. As the youngest, I was relegated to raking detail, removing as much of the cut grass as I could before the next pass cut the grass shorter and shorter. Looking at the cut field surrounded by those spruce is when I believe the dreams began. It didn't matter the number of players. We played for hours and hours all through the summer, the start of the school year, all that could stop us. A backstop and two benches were built using scrap lumber. The bases were old boat cushions. There was talk of putting up lights, but the cruel reality of the number of lights that would be needed nixed that idea. We were a bunch of kids who wanted a ball field, so we made one. Each time I took the field there, I hit like Mickey Mantle, covered the outfield like Willie Mays, and pitched like Don Drysdale. I went to school to learn, to church to pray, and to this field to dream. At 11, I started playing in a league at another field run by the township, about 3 miles from my house. That field became my new field of dreams. The lights, scoreboard, and outfield fence, making the big leagues seem even a more real probability. Teams were named after major league teams, and I played for the Brewers. Now it was their emerging star, Robin Yount, that I emulated. As I turned 15, he was a superstar, but he still played the game like one is supposed to.
Yount?
Like a kid.
Makes a great catch, and Ron DeAmis has thrown the first no-hitter in Milwaukee Brewer history on a great game-ending catch by Robin Yount.
Playing on that field was as close as I ever got to the big leagues. I guess that is a story for just about every kid who picks up a glove and bat and happens to dream. I can't complain, though. I had a good 10-year run as a would-be major leaguer. My career nowadays is relegated to a once-a-year softball tournament, in which I still try to play like I always have, like Robin Yount, like a kid. The field we built has been gone for decades now, reclaimed by grasses, weeds, and eventually offspring of the spruce that once lined our field. No sign remains of our handiwork or the countless hours a generation of kids spent there. On a recent trip back home, I drove past the second field of dreams from my teens. I was shocked to see it grown up in long grasses and weeds. The light poles, scoreboard, and fences reminded me of tombstones in an unkempt cemetery. Encroaching development of an ever-expanding city had claimed another victim. It mattered little to me what part of our bigger and better society this place was slated to become. No, in my mind, both would remain what they had always been. Places for kids, fields of dreams.
Ron Weber is a writer who lives in Weyerhaeuser. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and PBS Wisconsin in partnership with Wisconsin Humanities. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. Want to make sure you catch every Wisconsin Life story? Subscribe to our podcast. I'm Maureen McCollum.
It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We discuss the pending sale of Foxconn Technology Group's buildings in Eau Claire and Green Bay that were slated to be innovation hubs 6 years removed from the initial promised $10 billion investment by the Taiwanese-based electronics firm. As we discuss Foxconn in Wisconsin, call in with a question or comment, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Jeff Bollier is a business reporter for the Green Bay Press Gazette. Jeff, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thanks for having me, Kate.
Starting where you are in Green Bay, why is Foxconn selling its office building in downtown Green Bay?
So Foxconn put its property in downtown Green Bay. It's a six-story building, kind of a remnant of a former downtown shopping mall here in Green Bay. But they put it on the market for sale kind of as they are acknowledging that they're not planning to develop the innovation centers that they had originally envisioned building in several communities across Wisconsin as part of that larger $10 billion investment in manufacturing in Mount Pleasant.
What is the sentiment? How do Foxconn leaders feel about the Green Bay sale? And then on the reverse side, what do Green Bay leaders see in this?
Well, they're, both parties or both sides, the community leaders and Foxconn seem to have a mutual understanding that, plans do change, that decisions have to be made about business operations and where they're going to focus. And, so Foxconn has made the decision to, focus on its manufacturing plant and operations in Mount Pleasant. And that means kind of trying to sell these properties in Green Bay and in Eau Claire. In Green Bay, city officials, and like downtown Green Bay, sort of community organizations kind of look at it as an opportunity. The building that they did purchase is right on the Fox River. It's right kind of in the center of downtown Green Bay's retail restaurant corridor. And so there's opportunity there for companies to fill that space.
The list price for the six-story building, nearly $10 million. What business operations could be affected by the sale?
So there are four tenants in the building right now. An engineering firm called ISG occupies one upper floor of office space. A logistics company, C.H. Robinson, occupies another office floor. And then Broken Spoke Bike Studio and the Creamery Downtown, a restaurant, are on the first floor. So there could be four businesses that have a new landlord, kind of taking over their existing leases and uses of the space. It's thought that a new owner would be able to kind of capitalize on some of the revitalization and redevelopment happening in Green Bay Central City, look to bring in either a commercial partner or, new office tenants or more uses to the site.
Thinking about that revitalization and redevelopment, as you say, but we see cities around the country really grappling with sharp increases in the amount of empty office space. And will that lack of market demand for commercial space complicate a potential sale?
That is an interesting question to see. This is sort of the, some of the most high visibility office space in downtown Green Bay. It's got great views, and really is kind of right on, a well-trafficked area both for cars and for pedestrians on the riverfront. So it's there are sort of a lot of inherent assets that it has to see how it goes. And so there will be that interest. There is, some of the office floors do need some build out. It's not something where you can plop some desks in and turn on the lights, but it could be, good opportunities there. And Local officials have said that there is some interest or has been some recent interest in or inquiries about acquiring the building.
We will be watching for that. We have Green Bay Press Gazette business reporter Jeff Bollier, our guide to the latest developments on tech giant Foxconn's activities in Wisconsin and its real estate holdings. Call in with a question, share a comment, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The Foxconn Technology Group project was initially supposed to add thousands of jobs and be a $10 billion investment in Wisconsin. Now its properties are up for sale in Green Bay and Eau Claire. You can be part of the conversation at any point. Call in with a question, share a comment, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. We have Green Bay Press Gazette business journalist Jeff Bollier, who stays with us. Jeff, we heard from Sean in Milwaukee, called in to say that Foxconn continually overpromises and never delivers. And Sean says the jobs just haven't materialized. It's a consistent problem throughout the U.S. What are the employee roles like for Foxconn in Wisconsin?
So currently, my colleagues at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel have been kind of keeping an eye on how, how Foxconn's employment is, the restructured deal with the state did come with requirements that in order to receive the tax credits, a significantly reduced amount of tax credits, that they do have to hit certain, I believe, investment and job or employment numbers. So coming up for 2024 and 2025, recent reporting by my colleague Ricardo Torres in Milwaukee found that they have to employ 1,454 people in order to receive another $19.7 million in tax credits. So while there was a significant scaling down of it or recognition of that, the state did, keep job creation and more modest tax credit incentives in place on that.
Does Wisconsin have any indication if Foxconn is likely to meet this workforce goal?
Not very clear. I'm not very clear on whether or not that where that is, but they have in recent years, or the last 2 years, met their requirements for employment and investment numbers under the revised contract in the state, and have, I think, received a little bit more than, or right around $37 million in tax credits as a result.
We're going to jump to Eau Claire now, Foxconn's Green Bay property up for sale at the same time as it's put Eau Claire on the market. What is known about the Eau Claire listing?
I kind of found that as I was looking for more details about the Green Bay site. Mm-hmm. But it is similarly kind of listed as available for sale. It's priced, I believe, right around the same price that they purchased or an interest in the building for at the same time. And much like Green Bay, both communities said after the company purchased the buildings, that they, stayed in contact for the first few years, offered help and assistance with whatever they needed, and either finding employees or, in Green Bay, finding tenants for the other floors. But those plans just kind of changed, and in recent years had not heard much or gotten much of a response from the company when they inquired about the status.
Not much traction there. A similar scenario perhaps playing out in Eau Claire. But as we move to Mount Pleasant, business activities are underway at their plant in Mount Pleasant. What might be happening there?
So there is a variety of things, again, that you know, Ricardo Torres has been reporting on about that the company recently agreed to produce a component for solar, for the solar industry, called a microinverter. That was for a company out of California. And that manufacturing or production happened at Mount Pleasant, or at the Mount Pleasant plant. There are other, you know, similar agreements that are, you know, that the company is exploring. There's been some discussion of a solar farm being installed there in partnership with We Energies. And also, you know, during the pandemic, they did produce, I believe, some masks as well there too. But also, you know, then there's other parts of the bigger, you know, manufacturing or business industrial campus that Mount Pleasant developed that are going to other uses. You know, in April, Microsoft announced that they are going to purchase land to build a data center out there. So there are a variety of users that are kind of looking at the space now, in lieu of Foxconn scaled back.
When you talk about when you talk about a solar farm, it makes me think that there must be quite a bit of acreage out there that is perhaps being open for development. Are there still parts of Foxconn's land in Mount Pleasant that remain undeveloped?
As I am not totally well versed on that, but it is a very sizable you know, business and industrial park at about 1,200 acres. So there would be a lot of space out there, you know, potentially to develop a variety of uses out there.
We're talking about the pending sale of Foxconn Technology Group's buildings in Green Bay and Eau Claire, its other activities in Mount Pleasant. And we have Green Bay Press Gazette business reporter Jeff Bollier as our guide. You can join in with your questions, your comments about Foxconn in Wisconsin. The number is 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Jeff, you mentioned Microsoft recently purchasing over 300 acres in the Mount Pleasant campus and planning to build this data center. When does the company plan to start construction? Is there a timeline there?
I am not sure exactly on what their timeline is or, you know, if it is announced, but I do believe that they closed their sale this summer. And it looks like the terms of the sale call for Microsoft to start construction no later than July 2026.
It's interesting that, you know, Mount Pleasant itself, the community, took on debt to create the infrastructure for Foxconn. And, you know, there is land that can be developed, Microsoft being coming in as a developer. Is there a way the community could lure other companies that might want to build manufacturing operations in the area?
I would not be surprised if you know, multiple levels of local government and business organizations in southeastern Wisconsin there are actively always working on trying to recruit and attract various businesses to an area like that, and you know, to create jobs there.
What will you be watching in the coming weeks and months regarding Foxconn? What do you have your eye on?
You know, my focus is kind of, you know, Northeast Wisconsin first and foremost. And so I'll be watching to see what kind of interest there is in this sale listing that they have put up in Green Bay and Eau Claire. You know, it is, you know, while it is prime real estate, it will be, you know, it will be interesting to see what the commercial office and commercial property market is willing to bear, like you mentioned earlier, with the sort of softness in demand sometimes for commercial office space. Will they be able to get what, you know, more than what they purchased it for 5 years ago? Or is the market reality going to change? So,
but it's interesting, too, because the Green Bay building, its proximity to, like, the redevelopment that's going on, like the shipyard district in Green Bay and other efforts to redevelop along the Fox River, that also could have some interesting synergy.
It very much could. And I mean, it really is. It's located between two apartment buildings that have been open since 2015, 2016. There's several housing developments across the river along in the Broadway district as well. And like you mentioned, the shipyard a little bit further down the river is going to bring both recreational uses and hopefully more housing to the central city here in Green Bay. So there definitely will be opportunities, and it'll be interesting to see how it goes.
Jeff, thank you so much for joining us.
Kate, thank you for having me.
Jeff Beaulieu is a business reporter for the Green Bay Press Gazette, as we've been talking about his reporting on Foxconn Technology Group. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. As part of our summer series, Sampling Wisconsin Music, we meet Natty Nation. This is Celebration from their 2003 album, In Natty In Jah Music. The Madison-based rock reggae band named Artist of the Year for their genre by the Wisconsin Area Music Industry Awards. Call in with a question, a comment, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Aaron Conkle plays keys, melodica, and sings with the band. Aaron, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Good morning, and we have Demetrius Wainwright, stage name Jah Boogie, plays bass, lead vocalist as well for Natty Nation. Boogie, welcome.
Thanks for having us. Greetings.
Greetings. So here you are, almost 30 years after your first recorded album. Natty Nation continues to be recognized. You continue on this musical journey. What is your secret for maintaining momentum for nearly three decades?
Secrets. Wow. Well, I wouldn't call it a secret. It's just a love of music and a love of creativity. Just keeps us flowing. And it's just the creative juices just come from all over the place. So whenever we get the urge, we just do it. Hmm. And I think it's just, we're built for this.
You're built.
No doubt about it.
Yeah, how have you grown? How have you changed through making music for so long?
I don't know. I say change, but it just, I think you just get more seasoned. To get just like a ball player or any other thing that you do repetitively, just get better. Hmm. You know, at least you hope to.
A bit of muscle memory in there.
Muscle memory. You learn things along the way. You take from sources that that you admire and that you love, like other bands, Earth, Wind & Fire. Groups that you grew up with. You try to take notes from them. That type of thing. As far as I'm concerned.
Aaron, you joined Natty Nation in 2002. Were you a fan before you joined the band?
Yeah, I actually was. I used to go see them when I was in high school. I went to Madison West High. And I actually serendipitously was at one of their first shows at the Art Fair on the Square. At the time, I was really into ska, which is, for those who don't know, the precursor to reggae, one of the first Jamaican musics. And I was like, oh, okay, I'll go check out this reggae band. I just happened to be there. And I love them. And so a bunch of my friends, every time we would ever see them playing. We'd go see them at the Mango Grill, illegally, of course, because we were in high school. But yeah, we'd see him as much as we could. And then, yeah, I was playing with another reggae artist named Rocker T in 2001 from New York with a couple of the members of Natty Nation. And they mentioned to Boogie that they're playing with the keyboard player and came in, had one rehearsal. And after a few songs, he was like, "Hey, you got your calendar with you?" I'm like, "Yes, absolutely."
Do you remember what it felt like to join the band, that moment when you realized you were a part of Natty Nation?
Yeah, I mean, it was pretty surreal. I was 21 at the time, yeah, 21 at the time. So
let's call it 21.
Right? Yeah, well, I was 21. My consciousness was kind of all over the place, you know. So it seemed really cool, but like the weight of it wasn't really, you know, as like palpable at the time. Mm-hmm. But then, you know, as time went on, I was like, wow, I was just kind of like just rolled right into the situation like it was nothing. And but yeah, I mean, at the time I was just really thankful to be there and excited to be playing with some people that I'd been a fan of for so long.
Sure. Do you feel like Boogie says, you know, more seasoned now, more like a ball player, knowing exactly kind of where you're headed with this music and who you admire, what you want to draw from?
Absolutely. I mean, I think any musician kind of strives to be more as fluid as you can be, just kind of be a vessel for like source energy or nature, God, whatever you want to call it. And I think the more you do it, the more you don't have to worry about the mechanics quite as much. It's less cerebral and more just kind of like trying to get into that flow state where you can just be a vessel and just kind of channel the energy directly to out of your body into the people.
We're talking with keys player Aaron Conkle of the Madison-based band Natty Nation. Ja Boogie, frontman here as well, as we learn about their reggae rock music. You can join along the way. Call in with a question or a comment, 800-642-1234. Well, Boogie, we're going to listen to some music. This Natty Nation's album released in 96, and it is The Journey Has Begun, aptly named, and the song is Too Much Pollution, directly addressing climate change. Boogie, how emotional is the song for you today as we address the climate crisis decades later?
It's actually prophetic, actually. And just to hear our singer, J Max, I think I'm more emotional about that. But because, you know, he passed away in 2001. He's a huge part of the band at the beginning, you know, and that's his song that he wrote, and he was very aware, and he just brought that to my awareness. You know, I wasn't at that time that aware of the pollution and the things that were going on in the world, and it brings back, it's very emotional, you know, for me.
Boogie, how has the content of your music, the lyrics, how has it changed as band members have come and gone over the decades?
I think it's become more, I want to say metaphysical, because I'm deeply into the metaphysics, spiritual aspects of life, and did a lot of study, still study to this day. And I bring a lot of that into the music. As time has gone on, I just bring more and more of that into my music, metaphysical aspects, you know, the unseen, bringing it into the actual physical world,
mm-hmm.
you know, which I think musical is a spiritual experience, because it's something that you, it's something that you hear. It's not something that you exactly see, you know, as much as it's a vibration. So through the years, I've actually been studying that type of philosophy and bringing it into the music, into my lyrics.
Do you think that reggae in itself, kind of that vessel for peace and unity and love, does that also influence how you approach this style of music?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm. We realize it's a healing experience. Even scientifically, vibrations heal you. So we just try to incorporate those type of vibrations into the music that we make consciously, you know, on purpose.
Aaron, you're making those laid-back grooves and, you know, and combining that with the rhythms and those messages. How does the music move you? Where do you go?
It takes me to places that I don't know. Wow, that is a heavy question. it kind of takes you places that you wouldn't expect to go, and you could never really foresee it. I don't know. It's like a different realm. Mm-hmm. And like I was saying before, like the more you are able to kind of like, the more you know the music, the more you're familiar with it, the more you can just kind of like let go of the like thinking, then you can just kind of like flow into it. And like sometimes it'll like almost like in a meditation, like all of a sudden it's like an hour later and I'm like, wait a second, what just happened? Like, so it's almost like you're just like, it's like flow state. Like Boogie was saying, athletes get into it, you know, anybody who's really proficient at anything, when you're really just channeling, and you just get into that flow, you like time doesn't exist. Mm-hmm. And that's what we're always aiming to get to. And then to like kind of give that to people so then they can feel what we're feeling.
Keys player Aaron Conkle and Ja Boogie plays bass and fronts the band Natty Nation. This is False Prophet from Natty Nation's 2008 album Reincarnation. As we explore music around the state, hear from winners of the Wisconsin Area Music Industry Awards, call them to the question, share a comment, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. Election's over and I won't even see your face. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We explore winners of this year's Wisconsin Area Music Industry Awards and sample music made in Wisconsin. This is Come Home from Natty Nation's 1998 album, Earth Citizen. And you can be part of this conversation about Wisconsin music. Call in with a question, share a perspective, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Natty Nation lead vocalist Boogie is here along with its keys player, Aaron Conkle. Boogie, you were named Reggae Artist of the Year at this year's Wisconsin Area Music Industry Awards, and the label, your genre has this mix of reggae and rock. What attracts you to that musical intersection of reggae and rock?
I think it's probably the music that we grew up listening to. Reggae is a Jamaican, you know, genre, but when you research, you find that the Jamaican artists from of old listen to, you know, American, Black American music, and incorporated it into their style. So we're kind of doing it on the other side, you know. So it's kind of a nice counterpart to that, you know, being a Black American musician. It's nice to bring in their vibes into what we do. So that's where the rock meets reggae.
You mentioned you dropped Earth, Wind, and Fire earlier, and I'm just curious, what influences there from that iconic group might come through in your music?
The spiritual aspects. Maurice White, the lead singer, he's also a percussionist, brings a lot of just a spiritual Egyptian, you know, metaphysical vibes. If you listen closely to the songs, you can hear that. And then some of the vibrations that they brought through, they're all tapped in to the otherworldly aspects of life, and they brought it into the music. So that's what I try to do, and that they have huge influence on me when it comes to that aspect of music.
There's such a
philosophy.
Yes, there's such a spiritual element to what you're talking about in your music. I'm curious, what are some of your pre-performance rituals as a band or just separately, you know, as you prepare to encounter an audience?
I think well, that goes into the meditation, you know, the lighting of the incense, the getting your, it's actually just getting whatever you do to get focused, and, you know, the lighting of the incense, the meditation, the deep breathing, you know, focusing in on just certain, you know, certain things you want to say, certain things that you want to convey. So you need that quiet time with yourself. And I don't want to give away too much, you know, because it wouldn't be a, it wouldn't be a secret ritual.
Sure. I understand.
We've been involved with
yes.
it. Oh, yeah. I'm just making a joke. But Aaron and I have been exploring meditation for quite some time. And, you know, traditional ways, and then actually more like incorporating it into our own way of doing it. You know, it comes from India. And we actually started there with Yogananda, India, back in like 2000 and what would that be, 2006 or so? And just really bringing that aspect into the reggae is just a key thing that we try to do. And we even have a song called Meditation that just explores the whole thing. But I'd say meditation, the deep breathing, those are the rituals. And the lighting of the incense, they just aromatherapy, the calming of the mind to be able to, like he said earlier, be the vessel for this thing, you know.
Aaron Conkle, how do you get in the right headspace before performances?
Yeah, I tend to light some incense right up on stage and try to clear the space with some Palo Santo. But yeah, meditation, like Boogie was saying, is huge for me. You know, I try to meditate twice a day, every day. It's kind of a non-negotiable for me. And just to kind of release the stress. And so you can kind of not be so focused on, you know, the negative. You can just kind of take those experiences and put them where they need to be. So then when you're there, you can just be that vessel. You can truly focus on the positive, you know, reflect God through yourself out to those people, or, you know, nature. You know, I know the G word is kind of can freak some people out, but, you know, just the, your source energy, the true nature. So you can,
it sounds like meditation gives you the mental clarity you need to do the music, to do your craft.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Talking about Wisconsin reggae with Aaron Conkle there, who's keys player and frontman Ja Boogie, as we look at Reggae Natty Nation in Wisconsin. You can join in as we talk about Wisconsin music. Call in with a question or comment, 800-642-1234. reggae growing out of the Rastafari movement, and the content of your album Divine Spark expresses principles of the Rastafari movement. And let's listen to the title track off of Divine Spark. Christ is the avatar, rising out of a distant star. Boogie, how did the Rastafari movement, religious, political movement, influence Divine Spark?
Well, you know, I'd say I kind of went outside of that a little bit, going into more of the Vedas, going into the Indian, from India, concepts on that one, more than Rasta.
Okay.
Even though they're kind of paired in a way. Actually, you'll see a lot of Indians in Jamaica. But some kind of way they bridge spiritually. But I took more from the Indian side of things with that particular record. Even though it's all Rasta, you know, that you can't get away from that when you're playing reggae for me. You know, but yeah, that's more of an Eastern, take it from the Eastern side of things. With that particular song,
the Jah in Jah Boogie referencing the Rastafari movement. Can you explain why you include Jah in your stage name?
I mean, that's a name that was given to me too back in the day. But Jah or Yah, you know, it's kind of that G word that Aaron was mentioning. But really, you know, from where we come from, we realize we're gods in the physical. We're gods in the flesh. And that's basically where it's coming from. And the boogie part is that, you know, you can take that to, you know, far reaches, but it's basically the groove, you know, you boogie, things like that. Yeah, so it's basically how would I put it, the spiritual boogie or the spiritual dance, the nature dance, or the godly, you know, spirit of things, making you dance, or making you feel, you know, feel the groove or feel good.
Really, the spirit moving you. Yes.
Yes. Yeah. So that would be the interpretation.
Thank you both so much for joining us and talking about your music. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thanks for having us.
Jah Boogie plays bass, fronts the Madison-based band Natty Nation. Keys player Aaron Conkle. This is Stand in Love, originally from their sophomore album Earth Citizen. It's the 2019 version, released the same year the band was inducted into the Madison Area Music Association Hall of Fame. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.